Today our scripture reading comes from the Gospel of John. But Thomas, who was called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." Now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing, you may have life in his name.
What did Jesus do? We think we have it all figured out. I mean, we have the story written from several points of view, but what did Jesus do, really? His whole life, his whole ministry, some three short years. Every word he said, every action he did, they were to accomplish one thing. To break down barriers. Think about it. He was in, to put it in Lubbock terms, the barrier busting business. It's remarkable when you can get an alliteration and business in the same three words. But he was. People lived in a very rigid world in his time, didn't they? There were over 600 laws just pertaining to the Sabbath. You could only travel so far on a Sabbath. But you could cheat. If the day before the Sabbath, you traveled half the distance and took a rock and placed it halfway and came back home, you would have already traveled that distance. So when the Sabbath came, you could go the whole way and only half of it would count. Do you see that when he told the scribes and the Pharisees that they paid such close attention to the jot and the tittle of the law, you see what he meant? There were so many barriers. There were barriers of gender. You know, we talked about the temple and how it was laid out. There was the Holy of Holies in the center, and only the high priest could enter there, and only at certain times of years. And then there was the inner core of the temple, where only the priests and male Jews could enter. And then next there was a court in which the women could enter. And then last, there was a court in which all of the others, all of the hoi polloi of the world could enter. There were so many barriers. There were barriers by gender. There were barriers by race. When Jesus first announced his messiahship to a woman of Samaria, even though the Samaritans and the Jews were cousins, the Samaritans counted as a whole nother race. People who were left out. A few years later, when Paul would write a letter commending Onesimus, the slave, It would have turned their culture upside down to get a letter like that. There were barriers of race, of gender, and of class. Who did Jesus come to minister to? Who were his friends? Who did he have dinner with? Not the upper class scribes and Pharisees, did he? He had dinner and he had people over who were the lower class of society, weren't they? They were the down and outs. Some of them maybe had a disease that made them where they couldn't be around decent folk. Oh boy. Barriers of gender, race, class. Whew. Into this rigid world came a combination joyous revolutionary and invincible pioneer. Jesus, both of those, revolutionary and pioneer. What did he call himself? What did he call himself more often than not? The Son of Man. Technically, that's not what it meant. Strictly translated, it would have been the Son of Humanity. He came to teach us and show us what it truly means to be human. In order to do that, he had to break down barriers, the barriers of gender and race and class, even in some ways the barriers of religion, right? If you go back and read the Beatitudes, some of them are called the Be Happy Attitudes. Who are the people that come out looking good and living on top of the world in those? Is it the rich and the powerful and the rulers of the synagogue? No, it's the poor in spirit. It's the humble. It's the meek. It's the ones who have cause to mourn now because they will rejoice later. That's who he came to. But there was one last barrier. There was one last barrier to be broken down. This morning's passage is about breaking that barrier, isn't it? And only by confronting his own doubts could Thomas break that barrier for himself, could he? His closest friends had told him that they had seen Jesus. His closest friends, he trusted these friends with his life, but he just couldn't believe it. We've been taught faith good, doubt bad, right? Really, in a nutshell, faith is good, doubt is bad, right? Don't doubt, just have faith, right? I mean, that's part and parcel of what we've been taught. Well, how about this? For a long time, the church had the fervent faith that the earth was the center of the universe. And to doubt that faith meant being placed within the clutches of the Inquisition, and terrible things could happen to you if you doubted that faith. Who doubted that faith? Well, a couple of people named Copernicus and Galileo. Galileo, he figured it out, but he had to take it back. They made him recant. And it wasn't until recently that he was baptized back into the faith. So sometimes doubting what comes out as faith is not a bad thing. Wow, how do we tell the difference? For a long time, the church universal, taught that women were somehow inferior, that men were the head of the household, that women should keep their heads covered. They shouldn't wear showy clothes or jewelry, and they sure shouldn't teach men. That was long ago and far away, was it not? But there were those who doubted that that was a stricture of faith that should be kept. It was said as a matter of faith, was it not? As I said, Jesus was in the barrier-busting business. I just really like saying that. And that last barrier was death. Thomas doubted. Why do you think? Why do you think he doubted? I loved it. Did you see the cartoon that was up here before the service? Have you got that handy? Oh, I think I remember most of it. We don't call Mark runaway naked Mark. We don't call Peter denying Peter. Why do we call Thomas doubting Thomas? Ah, yeah, look at it one more time. Yeah, it is sort of funny how that epithet has stuck all this time with Thomas. And we don't even think of the name Thomas biblically without thinking of doubting Thomas. Okay. Thomas doubted because what he was asked to believe was so far outside of his experience that he couldn't get his mind around it. Remember last week when we talked about other barriers, the sound barrier, which we know we've broken, the speed of light, which we know we've broken with Starship Enterprise and the Millennium Falcon. You remember that? There are those barriers that come down sooner or later. I would posit this to you. Real spiritual growth can only happen in an atmosphere where healthy doubting is not only allowed, it's encouraged. Kind of think about that for a minute before you get really angry with me. Real faith can happen in an atmosphere only when healthy doubting is encouraged. At least it's afforded a life. When you doubt something, what do you do? Okay, what's the first thing you do? Yeah, the first thing you think about it, right? How can that be? Okay. Then what do you do? Then you might go to research. You might go to Google. If you're not as sophisticated as Google, you might go to Wikipedia. You can find anything you want on Wikipedia, and you can believe, I think, more than half of it, right? But you will think about it yourself, and then you will research it. And then what might you do? You might talk to those whom you trust and see what they have to say about it. Okay. If you're doubting and that's your MO, how might the resolution of that doubt look? What would it look like? Your doubt might be resolved by reaffirming your original position. If you do the research, you ask those whom you trust, and they all come to that same conclusion, that original position, then you can say, boy, I was doubting that for a little while, but I'm glad I feel better now. Or, it might be resolved into your growing into a new position. No one could doubt. I can't use that word. No one could question that Thomas loved Jesus, could they? No one could even to that point question that he considered Jesus the promised Messiah, could they? The only thing Thomas questioned was that he was alive after Thomas had and the others had experienced him as dead, as better than dead, as dead and buried. So when Thomas asked the question, and then he got the response, his doubts were, they evaporated and he moved to a new position of faith. What did Jesus say to him after that? And it's real important. He said, "Blessed are you, Thomas. You have seen and believed. But blessed are they who" what? "Have not seen." And that's you and me. That's you and me. We experience the same kinds of doubts all the time. Our faith changes and grows the more we learn about the world we live in. Don't fear that change and growth. Think about it. Do the research. Talk to those whom you trust. Pray. Of course, pray is number one and number five. And then come to either a solid conclusion, I was right in the first place, or move to a new position of faith. On that day that Thomas had his doubts removed, Jesus passed that blessing on to you and me. That's what I love about it. You see, I believe in eternity because of the loving witness of those who have gone before me. I believe in eternity partly because I was afraid Mary Louise wasn't going to be here so I could talk about her. It's hard to talk about her when she's here. I believe in eternity partly because I live with someone whose faith is stronger than mine. Oh, that's hard to admit, you know. Some of you may be in that same position. I believe in eternity because I sense the loving call of God upon my life. Christ is risen. I can't hear you. Christ is risen.